Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, Director of the Northwestern University Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman of Vocalo.org, 89.5 FM.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
Our guest for this segment is James Carter, Jr., who's chief engineer for the bridges and structures with the Norfolk Southern Corporation. He'll talk with us about the impressive Heartland Corridor Project.
The Heartland Corridor Project is a collaboration between the Norfolk Southern Railroad and state and federal governments that's intended to improve rail service between the Port of Norfolk and places in the Midwest. Among other elements of the project, it will provide a more direct routing for double-stacked container trains between Norfolk, Virginia, Western Virginia, West Virginia, and Ohio as far as Columbus. The project was begun in 2007, with a completion anticipated in 2010.
Hello, Norfolk Southern, Carter speaking.
I'm Joe Schoffer. I'm with Northwestern University, and my partner is...
Tom Herman, 89.5 FM, Vocalo.org.
Okay, Mr. Carter, thanks very much for joining us today. Can you give us a little bit more detailed description of the Heartland Corridor Project?
Well, the Heartland Corridor Project is, give you a little background. We run double-stack trains between Norfolk and Chicago via two routes. Both of them go west from Norfolk to Roanoke, Virginia. And then one route is from Roanoke up to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and then across Pennsylvania and the northern part of Ohio, Indiana, into Chicago that way. The second route goes to Roanoke, then down to Knoxville, Tennessee, and then up to Cincinnati, Fort Wayne, and Chicago that way. We have a more direct route on our railroad that goes from kind of directly northwest from Roanoke, Virginia, and then branches from the route from Roanoke to towards Knoxville at a place called Walton, Virginia, and then runs from Walton through Bluefield, West Virginia, along the southern part, along the West Virginia border and Kentucky, West Virginia border, to a place called Canova, West Virginia, then up through Columbus, Bellevue, Ohio, and then west to Chicago. That third route is about 230 miles shorter than the other two. The difference from our standpoint, as far as being able to run double stacks, is there were 28 tunnels along that route that didn't have enough clearance to move double stacks through them. We had to improve the clearance in those tunnels, and then there were various other clearance obstructions along the way as well, including about 8 overhead bridges that we had to do something to, several railroad signals and some slide fences. And the Heartland, the clearance portion, which is really what the Heartland Project is a clearance improvement project. And it is improving all those clearances along that route. The clearance project runs from Walton, Virginia to almost to Columbus, Ohio.
So if you got this route that you're increasing to be able to accommodate double stack trains now, why is that an important thing to do?
Being able to run double stacks, in other words, that's putting the containers one on top of each other on a rail car, and it really makes it much more efficient to move by rail. It's kind of almost intuitively obvious. We can run a train of the same length and basically carry twice as many boxes on it. So we're using the same manpower to run that train. And some more fuel, but certainly, you know, not as much fuel as an entire other train would be. So it's got a lot of efficiencies in it that lead to better prices for our customers.
With the you don't need a special engine. The same engine that can run a conventional single stack train is strong enough to pull a double stack.
Correct.
And when you're changing the height under bridges, if I'm imagining correctly, a railroad track going under a bridge, there's a road up on top. Where's the extra height going to come from? You can't raise the road
Well, these there were only overhead bridges like that, roadway bridges. On this route, there were only two involved that we didn't have sufficient clearance. One of those, there was one floor beam in the bridge that was close, and we relocated our track to gain enough clearance from that floor beam. It caused us to shift about a half a mile of our main track at that location, which was in Ironton, Ohio, to gain clearance there. The other bridge is in Bluefield, West Virginia, and we are negotiating with the city of Bluefield to if the negotiations are successful, we're going to remove that bridge. It's a bridge that we own and maintain. If not, we will raise it, jack it up.
What about lowering the grade of the rail? Is that an option?
That is an option in some places. Those two particular locations, it wasn't feasible. It was the relocation made more sense, and from a drainage perspective, it won't work at the location in Bluefield, so we're either going to raise the bridge or remove it.
And what's the strategy that you use in tunnels?
Well, in tunnels, you're faced with kind of a similar thing. The least expensive way of doing it is to lower the track if you can. We were only able to do that in five tunnels of our 28. The reason being predominantly this is very rugged terrain there in southern West Virginia where these tunnels are, and very often the tunnels were built because to cut off some distance. The railroad follows the Tug River and the Big Sandy River for the bulk of this route, very often as the river meandered around a point on the mountain, even some of them originally the railroad followed that point, and then the tunnel was built to get you a better alignment and cut off some distance. So, in doing that, many of these tunnels have a bridge on each end of them or very close to them. And so you would have had to modify bridges in many locations. And these tunnels over the years have been lowered already just to be able to haul. We already haul tri-level automobile cars over this route. So we had gone down about as all we could go down without getting below the liner foundations. Most of these tunnels are lined, so we would have had to underpin liner foundations, adjust bridges that are in some cases very low to the river anyway. So in 25 of our 28 tunnels that we had to modify, the solution was to go up. And we did that. Once going up, then you have a few options. Of the 23 tunnels that we went up on, or are going up on, raising the roof, if you will, you have two choices. These 27 of our tunnels are line tunnels, where the proposed clearance envelope encroaches into that liner just a little bit. You only need to take out what material out of the liner that you need to get the clearance that you need, and if that is structurally suitable with your liner, then you literally just grind that out, and you call that notching.
So if I'm picturing the liner, this is like a concrete tube, right?
Concrete liners, yes.
So what you're saying in the case, if the liner's thick enough, you can just grind away enough of the liner to accommodate the taller train.
That's correct. You literally we call it notching because you make a notch, you know, if you will. If you look at the cross section of a tunnel liner, you notch out the corners, which is where your clearance envelope interferes. You know, these are arched tunnels, so in the middle of the arch, you'll have plenty of clearance. Your interference always is in the corners.
Because you're running something rectangular through something
exactly.
Round.
So what kind of clearance do you design into this? What's the minimum gap between the top of the container and the bottom of the top of the tunnel?
Well, the double stack equipment that we're operating is 20 foot 3 inches high from the top of rail. And our design in this project, the vertical limit was 21 feet.
So you got 7 inches of play.
9 inches above.
9 inches above.
Right. Then we have some clearance on the side as well. The envelope, you know, isn't just a rectangle that we look at when we're doing this. And of course, super elevation comes into play. Most of these are on curves. And then, of course, you have to take into account train dynamics. You know,
because the car, presumably it's rocking back and forth a little bit.
Exactly. We take all that into account, and we have, you know, cushion built in there.
And when you do a project like this, do you have to shut the line down for an extended period of time?
We have not with this project. This has been a very remarkable project. This is one of our busiest railroads already. And a very important railroad to us. It's mostly a double track railroad. It is in the heart of our Appalachian coal fields, and a lot of our coal business is generated there. So it's an extremely busy railroad, and we didn't have the luxury of removing it from service. We've been working 5 days a week, 10 hours a day. The tunnel crews hold the track, have a 10-hour window to work, and then we run trains for 14 hours that day.
When you're talking about grinding away this massive amount of concrete, what kind of tools do you use? That sounds like a very labor-intensive thing.
Well, they have, for that, and that's the one method, and I'll get into the other, they use predominantly what you call a road header, which is, you know, like a big, kind of like a big dentist drill. You know, it's just a twirling drum with bits on it that just grinds away at the concrete. Now, we also, you know, when you get a little deeper, when your notch becomes a little deeper, we also add that we're going to be notching a liner, we grout behind the liner. In most instances there's void behind these liners, and we will grout that void full to give us more structural integrity. If the notch is getting a little deep to where we start worrying about the arch action of the concrete that's left, then we reinforce that by the use of rock bolts into the ground behind the liner. Now, if the notch, just because of the geometry, becomes so deep that the structural integrity of the arch is gone, then we are driven, if you will, to what we're calling roof removal or liner removal throughout, basically from the spring line of the arch to spring line of the arch. We remove the liner and then reinforce the ground with rock bolts and apply gunite.
So gunite is a very wet concrete that you can spray on under air pressure, I think. Is that right?
Correct. And it's mixed with steel fibers for reinforcement as well.
Yeah, so it kind of sticks to the sides there on its own and then hardens up.
That's exactly right. It sticks to the side, the roof. You spray it on and it stays.
Now, I know this, the kind of major construction that you're describing costs dollars. Where are you guys getting your dollars from for it?
Well, Heartland is another significant thing about Heartland for us is it is our Norfolk Southern's first major public-private partnership. The background of that in about 2003, I think, Marshall University, the Ray Hall Transportation Institute at Marshall University performed a study on double stacks across that route and the benefits derived to the tri-state area there of West Virginia, Kentucky, Ohio, from a intermodal terminal located in that area. And they published a paper that supported and spelled out the public, quantified the public benefits. That led to a lot of public support for this project. And in the 2005 transportation bill, a $95 million was appropriated for the Heartland Corridor Clearance Improvement Project. So there's $95 million in federal money. We also received money from the Commonwealth of Virginia and from the Ohio Rail Development Commission.
And I assume
Norfolk Southern obviously has money involved as well.
When you say the public benefits, what do you see as the main public benefits of having this double stack capacity all the way from Norfolk just about to Columbus?
Well, the Marshall folks there in West Virginia, just the benefits of being able to have double stack delivery of double stack containers to that area as well as the Columbus area. They didn't address the Columbus area. In lower transportation costs for businesses and consumers in that area.
Speaking of that and lower business costs, what effect do you think that this will have on the trucking industry covering the same area?
Well, that's hard to say. Now, Federal Highway Administration, I've seen data that suggests that they are predicting that intra-regional tonnage of freight by 2020, of course, this may have been published before this recent downturn, but they were predicting that intra-regional tonnage in the Southeast and the Midwest would increase by 89% by 2020. Now, if that comes, you know, if FHWA is correct, I don't know that the trucks will lose any business, but
because there'll be a need for so much capacity.
There's going to be a need, right? There's an obvious need for more capacity for transportation in this country, and rail transportation, is a very viable option, particularly in these from an environmental perspective and from a fuel and cost savings perspective.
What do you see as the impact, if any, on the roadside towns along the route to the project?
In the areas there are some intermodal terminals planned along the route, and in those instances, there should be economic benefits derived in jobs and economic activity and at lower costs, like I said, for goods and businesses in particular shipping things. Other than that, they're going to see a few more trains than they saw in the past, but not by in along that railroad with the density that's already there. It's not like it will be a whole lot more trains.
Can you explain to those of us who might not know what is an intermodal terminal and what does it do?
At an intermodal terminal, we start in Norfolk on this project at the East End, because that's Norfolk is a port, and the port there imported containers are loaded. Loaded ones are loaded onto a train right near the dock or on the dock almost. and then the train leaves from there. There's a very major intermodal terminal, the Rickenbacker Terminal. Norfolk Southern operates, just recently opened in Columbus, Ohio, and it's a very major intermodal terminal. At Rickenbacker, then, our train, once the Heartland terminals or the Heartland project is complete, the train will come from Norfolk into Rickenbacker with containers on it. And then the containers will be unloaded from the train, placed on the ground, and trucks will then take it to more local destinations rather than a truck having to bring them all the way from Norfolk to Columbus, let's say.
So the trucks are still in the picture. They're kind of handling what some people call the last mile.
That's right, or the short haul in, the last mile, if you want to call it that. They're delivering containers from intermodal terminals to the door of the customer.
When do you want to see the first double stacks roll down that route?
Well, we've said all along our schedule has been completion around mid 2010, and we still feel good about that completion schedule.
Is it stressful to manage or take part in a project that big and try to keep it on time?
Oh, it's a lot of fun. This has been a wonderful project to be a part of. It's anytime you're when you're doing structural modifications, particularly the projects where we're knocking the roof out of the tunnel, if you will. There's always unknown and there's always some risk. We did a lot of exploratory work, a lot of drilling, and to determine what's behind those liners before we open them up and know what we're going to need to do to remediate that. There is some ground that we encounter that we have to do more than just knock that liner out and put in rock bolts and spray gunite on it, because the ground would collapse. And in those instances, we've installed steel ribs every 5 feet and then blocked the ground as we go to give it support and fill that gap between the steel ribs with steel channel, and then fill any voids in there when we're finished with lean concrete. So we have a very strong, and then cover that with gunite. And we have a very substantial system when we're finished. And the key to Heartland has been, one, the cooperation of our transportation people to find us this window, this 10-hour window on this very busy railroad, which wasn't an easy feat. It was almost unheard of when we started talking about this project, and we were able to do it and still serve our customers, keep our coal customers, and merchandise trains that run through that area. We have one single stack intermodal train that runs through that area, and that drove our daily schedule. We have three zones. When we were working in Virginia, for example, our work window was 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. When we're in between Bluefield, West Virginia, and Williamson, West Virginia, our work window is between 2 a.m. and noon. And then from Williamson West, our work window is from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's all built around this train pair that, as you can imagine, their arrival times along the project move like that. And that drove these staggered work windows at the various locations on the project. So we were able to get the work done, but still keep the trains moving on the schedule that they needed to move on. And so that was a big challenge, just being able to do that, and then do the work, keep it under keep the schedule up, keep costs, you know, as in line as you can keep costs, and yet and do the work safely, and do good quality work, and yet do it in 10-hour windows. Be able to get out of the way and run trains for 14 hours, and we've been able to successfully do that for the over a year and a half that we've been working out there doing that now, and we've got another year to go. And we've had very few hiccups along the way.
So that's a pretty impressive scheduling feat. The one thing that strikes me as you describe it is that it sounds like the container freight is very time critical.
Very time critical, absolutely. It's
So why is that? What's in those boxes?
Anything could be in those boxes. You know, it could be the next TV that you're going to buy, or it could be it could be whiskey, it could be wine, it could be clothes. You never know what's in one of those containers.
So it's largely retail products and manufactured products.
It's a mix of everything. There's a lot of retail. You know, it's a lot of it's imported things. So a lot of it is retail products. Or other things that aren't retail products also.
So it's very interesting.
Some of them are refrigerated. Anything that moves is moving in those containers is on those trains.
So it's particularly interesting to hear you describe this, because what we learn from it is the extent to which an infrastructure construction, reconstruction project interacts with the day-to-day logistics operation that are so deeply enmeshed in the economy. And it sounds like you've been able to do a very effective job in balancing those two.
Yeah, we're very used to that, you know, on the railroad and in what we do with our projects. We're always tied to train schedules and being able to figure out how to do our work in short blocks of time. Probably more so than our brothers on the highway side. We don't have as quite as much flexibility as they usually do. But this project, the scope of it, you know, spread out over such a long portion of our railroad, and the fact that we had to have, you know, we had to have track time to get out there and get the work done. But everyone in the company realized that, and it's the planning of Heartland was a great team effort with our transportation people and our marketing people, and we made certain that we kept our customers, particularly our coal customers there, who were very concerned, I'm sure, when they first heard about the project, because that's their lifeline. They're getting their product to their customers. And they certainly didn't want us interfering with that. So we had to be sure that we kept that in mind as we planned the work and as we executed.
One last question: as somebody who spends as much time as you have working on trains and their routes, what's your favorite train song?
I hadn't thought about that. I don't know.
Well, we won't make that a quiz, but if you think of it, you should let us know. Mr. Carter, we really appreciate your spending the time describing this interesting project to us. We wish you good luck with it. We look forward to the announcement that the double stacks are running in this new corridor, and we wish you well in your career. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.